computer. Who charge is kind of juggling too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. Two adapt in the situation, two shots. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Juggling specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people will turn this around." Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Thought thy getting get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can hear us at timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and you can catch the live stream at that location. We're streaming at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and the live stream is playing there also. We're streaming at abibitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, to make that one of your favorites, put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 6:08 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, the Sunday, March the 29th edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, activist, organizer, co-founder of Racial Justice Now, Sister Zakiya Zankara Jabbar will be joining us. We'll be talking about a myriad of subjects with us, with her, based on her work that she does. We'll kind of start off talking about the Target boycott and her involvement with some of the organizers there, the need for black people to fund our own liberation struggles, and the continued killings of unarmed black men by police. Some information that might be new to you, Sister Jabbar will share it with us this evening. And again, you can always join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 6:14 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum. Here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Hey, look, I was going through one of them. I was having one of them technological challenges over here for a minute. I thought, like, well, you know, I had to bring out the subgroup computer and the whole bit. But everything is everything. So I'm looking forward to talking with Sister Zakia and, you know, and just you know, I really like the spirit and the work of Sister Zakiya Elliott. You know, I've been following her for a while in relationship to being, you know, now there's organizers. I'm a wannabe organizer. I want to be great. But Sister Zakiya is an organizer. So I'm really looking forward to our exchange and the input that she'll give in relationship to the topics that we'll be discussing.
Richard, I'm glad to have her back with us. We had her husband on. This was years, I think it was before COVID, Richard, when he was on with us. So it's good to have her back to talk about several issues. And one breaking issue that she's going to talk about tonight with our Time for Awakening audience. But let me get her right on with us. Our guest tonight, activist, organizer, and co-founder of Racial Justice Now, Sister Zakiya Zankara Jabbar. Sister Zakiya, how are you?
Greetings, brothers. I'm glad to be here with you. I'm doing all right.
Listen, Sister Zakiya, before we kind of get started and talk about the several issues, let me deal with something that Richard just mentioned about you being a organizer. And, you know, on this program, we've had both men and women in our community that are organizers and activists. But you are both. And that's, I wouldn't say that's rare, but that's a gift, put it that way, to be an activist and an organizer. Two separate things, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry. But vital in our struggle in this present situation we find ourselves in. But let me ask you a question, being an activist and organizer, because you're, let me put it this way. The way you are, you and your husband, it's rare that I've come across. Now, maybe Richard or maybe yourself have run across others. But usually, if the wife or woman is an organizer or an activist, the husband might be kind of like a helper or a helpmeet with his wife and vice versa. But rarely, in my experience, have I seen both partners, activists and organizers. Talk about it from your perspective. What got you involved in activism? Not necessarily how did you meet your husband, but it's kind of rare that both mates are both activists and organizers. That's extremely rare to me. I don't know how it is with you, Richard, but it's rare. And I just wanted to kind of get you to kind of talk about yourself.
Yes, sir.
Before we talk about your work.
Oh, well, yes, sir. Man, that's beautiful. I really, really appreciate you doing that because oftentimes people erase my husband as if he doesn't exist. And I just honor you for recognizing that, you know, he is just as much a part of this work that I do as well. And we are absolutely partners in that way. In terms of the activism and organizing that we do together. He has, you know, certain things that's more of a passion for him, and I have things that are more of a passion for me. And but we try to do our best to find balance. In terms of me specifically being an activist and an organizer, I started off as an activist. I had to develop, and I'm still developing, just to be honest with you, being an organizer, because you're 100% right. It takes a special gift to organize, and I will go a step further. Just a minute, I had some background noise. One moment. So I would say I take it a step further, you know, with organizing, you really, especially organizing with Black people and oppressed communities in general, you really, and I learned this from Chokwe Lumumba, if you don't love the people, you'll eventually betray the people. And I actually love our people. I've been tested. And so I'm really speaking from existence. I mean, from experience. I've been tested. And I'm continuing, even right now, sitting in Dayton, Ohio, brother, being tested right now. Because You know, there's always manipulations in our community from people who are outside of our community. Because we are a colony within the United States, you have to consider all of the other issues that people are managing and dealing with. And a lot of it is economic. And so when you have the enemy that comes to pick off certain people, you have to become an expert at reading people. You got to become an expert at reading body language, reading really what's being said.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, brother, I just experienced it. Because I'm in Dayton right now because I got to bring together local people who have been operating as ops.
Mm.
But I was able to do it. They all showed up. I'm not bragging. I promise you I'm not. I knew that this situation was going to call for me to have a higher level of consciousness and a higher level of patience to navigate everybody in the room today. And it's still difficult because we're dealing with factions even outside the community. There are people, including the police and the power structure here right now, that are not happy that I'm here. Because they see me as stirring up shit. You lived here before. You're gone. Why the fuck are you here? Excuse my language. But they're pissed because they're used to the factions that are here every single day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every single day. They're used to being able to keep them under their control. See, they don't control me. I'm also not afraid of them.
Okay.
I wasn't afraid when I lived here. I lived in Dayton for 20 years. My organization and how I got into activism was right here in Dayton. So if anybody was going to be able to pull people together, that was based on the fact that people know who I am. They trust me. They love me. And they know that if Zakiya come to town, she's real and she ain't going to stab me in my back. That's how I was able to get people who are ops that live here every single day to show up for a meeting because I called for it.
Mm.
So that's just, I would have to say that took years to develop. To become an organizer took years. And some of those people, you know, that I've had to call into the space today, I had even had my own challenges with in the past. And I took the initiative to apologize for the larger goal of, am I really effective if I can't get along with the people in the community that's willing to fight and throw down? Am I really being effective? Or should I go back and apologize for what I said and say, hey, can we come back together and realize who our real enemy is? Because brother or sister, you're not my enemy. We're majoring in the minors over here over something real small. But we still dealing with police brutality. But we still dealing with our kids being mistreated and not being taught anything in schools and being miseducated. Can we come together on that? And so usually I think really the ancestors and the Most High that I have been able to overcome, you know, a lot of the challenges that you usually find trying to organize Black people around a particular agenda. So I really, really appreciate that question. That really set the tone, I think, for what we're going to talk about.
And I have to interject this. Hey, Elliot.
Go ahead, Richard.
We have heard this, and I'm going to call it a principle. Y'all help me out if it's a principle that we have to have as organizers and as African people in the situation. You have to love the people. Didn't we hear that before? Haven't we heard that a couple of times?
Yeah.
I mean, it is so, like, that's, I mean, to me, that's a governing principle in relationship to what I hear you saying, Sister Zakiya. So I just wanted to emphasize that because for the Time for Awakening audience, it's a lot of us out there. And adding that if we don't have, it seems that the other part that you brought up, Sister Zakiya, fractions, and I like what you say, the ops. Because that's what occurs when we as individuals don't love our people, it seems.
That's right. Right, right. Or we, you know, and we also know that we are dealing with epigenetic trauma. So I keep that in the forefront. That's why I say I read body language and I use pattern recognition as well. I read what people say to me so I know what their, a lot of times I usually know where their pain points are. So I'm not talking about anybody individually, But we are talking about people who are former drug addicts. Okay. We're talking about people who are maybe currently dealing with addiction. We're talking about our people, man. You know, we know that we're dealing with a number of different issues. So the mental health challenges, you know, like you said, some of the factions, like, that's going to come with the territory. And it's up to those of us who are real leaders to figure out how to navigate it. Because so many of us have given up and said, well, you know, I'm going to join this team over here. I'm going to join that team over there. And then they start to make excuses for why they're on that team and make excuses for why that team is also participating in anti-blackness. Mm. And the goal is to get us to stop doing that shit. Oh, wow. For me.
hey, Ellis, you just bringing all kind of joy out of brother man over here. But I agree with you.
You know, before we spend some time, quite a bit of time, on the events that just happened in Dayton, Let's talk a little bit about the Target situation that you were intimately involved with, because you knew the on-the-ground activists that started that movement, contrary to what, and being a lot of our people don't have the proper information, a lot of our people, and I would dare say maybe a majority of our people, thought that the pastor or minister, or whatever, Jamal Bryant, was the one that started the Target boycott. But talk about it from your perspective as working with the on-the-ground people in the city where Target's corporate offices or Target started in Minneapolis. Talk about it from your perspective, Sakia, and let our listening audience know the boycott that our people was instrumental in. It has been successful. It still is being successful. Just talk about it from your perspective.
Yes, sir. So, while I was not involved in intimate planning or anything like that in the boycott, Nakima Levy Armstrong, who is one of the co-founders of the Target boycott, is a close colleague of mine, and she's actually also a close friend of mine. And that's also rare, is that I have plenty of colleagues, but she's truly a sister friend to me. She and I also worked together for 2.5 years for a national organization where she was the executive director, and she hired me as her director of education, policy, and advocacy. That organization was called Wayfinder Foundation. It was a staff of all Black women. There were about 7 of us, and we supported grassroots activists, particularly women of color, in about 5 states across the country. And we ran out of funding, and so that's why, you know, we no longer work together in that capacity at that particular organization. So I wanted to give that background so that your listening audience understands that I do have, you know, very intimate knowledge about the boycott, and that Nakima would have loved to have been here for herself to be on here, but she's traveling today. In fact, she's traveling to Pittsburgh, so she'll actually be in Pennsylvania. She is one of the co-founders, Jamal Bryant. Neither Tamika Mallory or Nina Turner are the founders at all. The historical record, Jamal Bryant admitted himself on his Jamal Bryant podcast, which, you know, has millions of, I guess, you know, subscribers across, you know, platform, that she was the founder. He said it himself. And so for him to go and hold a press conference in Washington, D.C., of all places, and like, why? I mean, Minneapolis and Target, the headquarters is based right there. I mean, so why would you go to the National Press Club? Like, what? I mean, it made no sense. And then for him to, you know, have, you know, Tamika and Nina and all of them there, and, you know, they're talking as if they got some concessions, and brother, they didn't get anything. That was admitted, like Target admitted that in the USA Today article. So, I mean, it really was intentional confusion, I believe, on those people's part. And that has to be, there has to be accountability for that. And that's why you saw Nakima's visceral reaction on Roland Martin, you know, to his line of questioning around the issue. So I personally view this as another issue where you have gatekeepers and co-opters and people who are in certain positions who are adjacent to white supremacy and corporations, who a lot of times will get something for themselves or for their immediate family or for their organizations and throw the rest of the community under the bus. That, I believe, was part of the attempt there, which was really egregious. And thankfully, because Nkema, who is an attorney, right, and who is an activist and organizer as well, she's been on the ground in Minneapolis for so long, she has built up her own relationships in national media. So the only reason why Jamal Bryant had to come out and apologize is because Nkema was not a small enough local activist that he could bury her. And we have seen where people like Tamika Mallory and her organization and their affiliates right there in Louisville, Kentucky, and this can be proven because my husband's cousin was on city council at the time. So, you know, I know they've been threatening me about defamation, but I'm going to continue to tell the truth. Tamika Mallory and her organization did hop into town in Louisville and straight hijack the movement from local grassroots organizers, including my cousin who was on the damn city council. And he addressed them publicly, even back then in 2021, about that. So this is a pattern and a history of people like that who co-opt local movements for personal gain.
Go ahead, Rick.
If I may, because, and I like to, for us to, you know, Sister Zakid, I mean, you raise a really, this case, really, this situation raised a continuous event, a continuous pattern, as you say, right? So I'm trying to, you said intentional confusion and you recognize the pattern, but I'm trying to figure out, how do we analyze this? How do we talk about this to where it isn't just, you know, like, you know, over the fence talk more than just, you know, a real analysis for those who are looking, who are organizers, particularly like starting on mm-hmm. their path that might be listening, and those mm-hmm. who are sitting just listening. Because if we don't get this clarity that this is a part of the structure, and maybe that's the question I'll come. What is it that you see people doing this, because they may be doing it unconsciously. I don't know.
Who might be doing it unconsciously? I mean, you come out.
Yes.
Jamal Bryant?
Yes.
Hell no. Let me explain. I didn't say the part where Nkema, see, this is secondhand information, but I have access to the screenshots. That's why it would have been good if Nkema could have been here, because she could have spoke directly to it. No, that's why I said it was intentional. I use my words very right. I can say with confidence. When I use the word intentional, that was with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
From Nkema Levy Armstrong herself, who she knew that they were trying to hijack the movement a year ago. And back in April of 2025, she got the text messages to prove it because she checked them on text. So, yes, that's why I say no. I know that that's the narrative that they are putting out in the media now, but they know damn well that that's BS, and we got the proof.
Is it? Yeah. And I keep, I'll be going to the actual, to the abstraction, if you don't mind, you know, because I think it's important for, I seen during the Black Power movement, and the money came through model cities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like people who were, you know, who were really talking about community development, self-governance, you know, mm-hmm. they were considered the radicals. But then it was mm-hmm. this that had to take, they felt they were losing because the language and the organizing was getting the people. So they mm-hmm. had to jump and use the language, and the money, the federal money came to them. It didn't come mm-hmm. to who
exactly.
Did
it's a whole model. It's a whole model.
And that's what I think.
That's why you saw the community. But see, it ain't even just me, brother. Like, go but look at some of the comments on even Roland's video and on some of the article video. Like, black people wasn't born yesterday. So many people was in the comments like, how much was the check? The check cashed. Like, I mean, everybody knew it. Mm. Like, Target paid y'all. And of course, that's why Jamal had to come out and another interview and say, I didn't take a dime. I didn't get anything. Well, then why did you come tell the community that that you secured this and secured that? Like, I mean, just go back and look at the timeline of what he said and what he backtracked. And then, like, it's just, it's a mess. It is a mess.
And one thing
that's why he had to come and do a 20-minute apology. And he was even fabricating some stuff in that. But he did the 20-minute apology to back out because he knew he had made a mess. So...
See, Elliot, we see this history go over and over again.
Over and over again. Yep.
I think it's just important for us to bring that up. But it's
another side. Nkema, and I think it's so important. If Nkema was not even a match for them, yes, she's Minneapolis based, but she's very much an international leader. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Nkema has been on the front line. Like, think about all the brothers that's been murdered besides George Floyd in Minneapolis. Jamar Clark, Philandel Castile, Dante Wright. Like, you can just name them down. She's been on the front lines of all of those. So the national media know her. They know her. So she's got her own, like, connections. And so as soon as, like, that's why she came out and did, as soon as they did their press conference, they did their press conference at 12, Nkema was in front of Target's headquarters at 3 p.m. the same day. The same day. She squashed it. And that is what happened. Yeah.
Sister Takia, her activism around this issue didn't just like, and I'm glad that you mentioned about her.
Right.
Work.
She go way back.
It didn't just pop up around the murder of George Floyd.
She'd been on the ground. Yes.
That's what I wanted you to kind of let our listening audience know. Her stepping to Target.
Nkema is thorough.
Go ahead.
Yes. Nkema is thorough. And let me tell you how thorough she is. Because don't nobody do this. She was a tenured law professor, y'all. She's a lawyer. She was a law professor at the University of St. Thomas School of Law, based in Minneapolis. She left the tenure position, according to her, because Spirit and God told her to, that she would be more effective outside of the bourgeois walls of a law school and to get into the community. And that's exactly what she did. And she figured out how to still self-sustain herself and her family. She's a lot like me. Her husband is not necessarily an activist, but her husband is very much supportive of the work that she does. And she also has small children like me. Both of our daughters are named Asada. My daughter is older. Mm. Like, that's how close we are. You know what I mean? Like, our families are close. Our husbands are close. So she goes way back. So, like, I mean, when I think about how people try to, you know, people who don't know her and they try to malign her and say, oh, why is she out there fighting for immigrants? She is a person that fights for justice. That's why I was upset when he was like, well, you know, she out there fighting for immigrants, and what about black people? All you got to do is Google her. Like, she's there. Like, she's been fighting for black men this whole time. Every black man within the last 10, 15 years, I believe she's been there. I believe she's been in Minneapolis at least 15 years, if I'm not mistaken. But every police killing, even the ones that were not high profile, she's been on the front line, her and her comrades in the community. That's how she was able to make the ICE issue more of a civil rights issue, because the ICE issue was leaving out what was happening to other people, especially black people. She was the one that connected it to police brutality, because that was not the mainstream. I'm in an interview. That was not the mainstream talking point. It only focused on the Latino community. And she was the one that made the connection between this is police brutality on a different level. It's the same thing. And so that's who she is. She's going to continue to move that way. She is, when she says she's led by, you know, a higher power, I also know that to be true. We also share some of that, although I don't necessarily subscribe to Abrahamic religions. I'm very much a spiritual, and African spirituality in particular. And so those are, that's another nexus that she and I, you know, have similarities and cross that. So I vouch for her 100%. And she's not the type of leader that is, you know, pimping families' pain for her own gain. I've never seen her do that. And I don't believe it's in her character to ever do that.
Sister Lakia, we see that the movement that was started there by the sister has reaped benefits for the community, so to speak, because black folks stopped shopping in mass at Target. The numbers.
That's the other thing. That Target boycott has been successful. Okay. Yes, please talk about it. It's been successful.
Well, and that's what I want, because the numbers show it. And
the numbers show it.
They reacted to it by firing the CEO, having massive layoffs. So some of our people that don't realize, because, listen, I have a business that 99.9% of the people that come in look like me and you.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Our people always, you always hear that, well, our people ain't going to do anything. We don't have any power. We're not together. But it's things like this that shows that if our people work together, we can bring these people to their knees. And they know
that's
it.
That's right.
That's why they make sure that they keep misinformation going. Unless you are really following this, you don't know the impact that black people made to hurting that company's business. And others.
Mm-hmm.
It's others out there suffering also from this.
Right.
But go ahead. So, go ahead. Express your insight on that also. The numbers. Because I know that she shared with you how that company is reacting to people not shopping.
So I will say, you know, based on, you know, my knowledge that she and I have discussed, I don't recall specific numbers, but here's what I do know, is that they certainly have seen a huge decline in foot traffic. There's a number to that. They've seen it. They've published it, okay? Their quarterly calls, I mean, you know, Target is a public company, so people who have stock in Target, you've seen the stock price just be in the red for, like, the entire year. Like, it has had a few bumps, but it's been down consistently, okay? They also had to rearrange their, you know, leadership. That was also a response. That's usually what you see corporations do. Okay, we got to do something. Let's get rid of the leader. Okay, that's not working because we're continuing to sustain. And from Nakima's perspective, like she said in the Roland Martin interview, as far as they are concerned, the actual legitimate organizers of they're based in Minneapolis, Nakima Levy Armstrong, Monique Cullors Doty, and there's a Somalian immigrant brother that's also a co-founder. His name is Jelani Hussein. He's the executive director for CARE Minnesota, which is the Council of American Islamic Relations. And all three of them have been consistent and say the way that this new CEO can begin a conversation with us is to immediately reverse their decision on ending the diversity, equity, and inclusion program. And that would get the talk started on top of all the other promises that they made, which they also had made a commitment to the local community there for George Floyd, which I believe has not been fully realized. So that all of those are the things, you know, that's still at issue here. And let me just explain before I take a break. The reason why, because a lot of people are like, well, why Target? Why Target? What about Amazon? What about Walmart? What about all these other countries? They did DEI too. Target, because Target set up there and made local promises, number one, to the communities where their headquarters is. But then not only that, Target was one of the front runners for years. As a corporation, they were known for being so-called progressive. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that championed having Black entrepreneurs and was really out front promoting all the DEI. They were one of the leading corporations to first embrace it. So that's why Target. You don't see Amazon doing that. You don't see a lot of these other corporations really fully embracing any of that stuff. They didn't do that. Target did. They also fully embraced the LGBTQ community. I don't know if you remember, but the conservatives, they had their own backlash with Target because they went in there on Pride Month and it was LGBT stuff all over. So my thing is, they have led in all of this. So now as soon as Trump come in, y'all going to cave to that BS? So their community said, heck no. No, we're not taking it. And sadly, because Target is not like a necessity store, like, you know, it's not like a dollar store. It's not like Walmart, right? A lot of people that shop at Walmart kind of have to. Well, Target is kind of, if you, I mean, I don't know how y'all know, but colloquially it's known as Target, yeah. Right? It's very much a middle class store. So middle class people have options. Hey, Target cooks.
You know, but you raised it's two points that you raised. I think we, you know, just like the organizational organizing aspect and the co-opting part, this thing of, as you said, Target was already as a corporate entity, right? Being what people call progressive in the sense of, from what I understand, they were putting Black businesses product on the shelves and supporting mm-hmm. Black businesses. So the question of, and as you say, they already had a Black consumer base. So, mm-hmm. so to just this tendency for, mm-hmm. and it's just not corporate, but for white America to pull his backlash by giving a signal, right? Because mm-hmm. obviously it wasn't hurting. They said they lost $20 billion in market capitalization. So they were benefiting from the strategy they were having.
Facts.
Right?
Thank you. Yes.
So just the signal to say, like, you shouldn't do it. Before they was doing it, not necessarily under DEI. They responded because it was considered DEI. Shouldn't we really think about how this corporate culture supports white domination and mm-hmm. once again will support it regardless of losing what we say they believe most of is money. They mm-hmm. lost money. We can't say that would you agree, and should we explore that?
I believe you're right. Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm about to in a little bit. Yeah, sorry, I'm at a friend's house in Dayton. You know, she cooking for me and everything. You know, I'm at home. You know what I mean? I'm at home with my people. Okay. But no, but I want to say that, yes, that's a huge part of it. And so I believe Target has a decision to make. I think this is going to go down as one of the most successful modern day boycotts in our history. To be honest, once we really get to the bottom of it, I mean, they were banking on this Jamal strategy, y'all. Y'all have to really understand that at a higher level. They were banking on, let's just bypass what these local Negroes is talking about. Let's go get us a national Negro leader, give him a little money, and get two women that they are also national leaders as well. And we just gonna squash this. That's what they thought was gonna happen.
That's Elliot. This is because something else you raised, Sister Zakiya, as far as the market consumers, mm-hmm. Black middle. I mean, we have to look at that. If Black middle class or middle income Black people are a part of this disinvestment, that should be a signal to them. And mm-hmm. We have to figure out how do we tap into that on other things.
Yes.
You know, because. Yes.
The other thing I want to mention, too, that mm-hmm. Nikema mentioned, because she has the data on this, is that white women also joined the boycott. Women in general control the discretionary spending in their households. Mm-hmm. Okay. And okay. They usually are the ones that's doing the house shopping, especially at a Target. Think about it. House cleaning, stuff for the kids, you know. it's mostly women. And so white women join. That's the beauty about Nakima. I'm a nationalist, so it ain't my ministry to be organizing white folks. But she does, and she does it well. She knows how to do multiracial organizing in a way that I think is truly brilliant. You know what I mean? Mm. That's, like I said, that's not my ministry. I know clearly what my calling is, but I'm in solidarity with what that sister does because I know where she's doing it from, and it's directly from her heart, and she has principles, and it's not about any type of clout chasing, any type of money. It truly is. And like you said earlier, that stuff is kind of hard. It's real rare to find people who don't have a price, bro. Mm.
You know, I want to come back to what you're talking about, what you just mentioned, because, in fact, I'm going to save that for last. Now, first, mm-hmm. let's do it this way. How's your time, Sister Zakiya? Because I know that you're visiting. So.
Yeah. I think if we can go maybe, let's see, what time is it now? I can go another 20 minutes, and then I'd like to wrap up, if that's okay.
Okay. All right. We'll take it to. Because we're going to take a break in a few. So we'll take it through. How's 7:30? You're in Central or Eastern?
I am on Eastern time in Dayton, yeah.
Okay. 7:30 sounds good?
So I have 6:50. 7:20 is better.
7:20, good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me do this. I want to read this press release for our listeners. In fact, I'm going to get some of these calls on just in case they want to ask some questions to you before go. But let me read this press release in relation to why you're in Dayton.
Yes.
Racial Justice Now, dedicated to eliminating anti-black racism. Community leaders hold press conference demanding accountability in police killing of Reginald Thomas, Dayton, Ohio. On Monday, March the 30th at 3 p.m., a coalition of racial justice organizations, community leaders, and concerned residents will hold a press conference in front of the Dayton City Hall to call attention to the police killing of Reginald Thomas and to demand accountability from the city of Dayton and its leadership. Reginald Thomas was stopped by Dayton police while riding his bicycle and was threatened with a pat-down search before the encounter escalated into a chase and fatal shooting. Community leaders are demanding answers about why Thomas was even stopped in the first place and whether racial profiling played a role in the encounter that ultimately led to his death. Why was Reginald Thomas stopped in the first place? He was riding a bicycle and minding his own business. The community deserves answers. If police had left this man alone, he would still be alive today, said Sister Zakiya Zankara-Jabbar, co-founder and executive director of Racial Justice Now. Speakers at the press conference will call for truth, accountability, systematic changes, including an independent third-party investigation into the killing of Reginald Thomas, immediate public release of all body camera and dash cam footage, full transparency with the city of Dayton and the Dayton Police Department, accountability for all the officers involved, an end to racial profiling and pretext stops, creation of a civilian review board with subpoena power, investment in community-based public safety solutions, and violence prevention. Now, let me throw this in before you talk about what's going on, Zakiya. According to published reports, Mr. Thomas was riding his bike, and he veered off to ride on the pavement. A police officer stopped him and told him that he needed reflectors and a light on his bike. Mm-hmm. He said, well, the reason he came onto pavement because there was no bike lane in the street. Again, he wanted to stop him, pat him down. He refused, saying, you know, why are you stopping me? When he tried to take off on his bike, that's when he was gunned down. And now I don't know how he was gunned down, probably in his back. Because that seemed like the MO of a lot of these police. But talk about it from mm-hmm. your knowledge of the situation and what happened.
Well, that's my understanding as well from the published reports. I want to make sure I name the fact that there is a local organizing committee here that does not just include me. but it includes, like I mentioned, other organizations and other people who are still based right here and live here in Dayton every single day. So I want to name Carlos Buford, who is the executive director for Black Lives Matter Dayton. He is one of the people that I stay in touch with. He is one of the people that calls on me when he needs me still. He's one of the people that if he calls me and says, Zakiya, I need you to come help, I'm coming. Okay. The other sister, Sabrina Jordan, she's also still Dayton-based, and she runs an organization because her own child was also a victim of a police murder. So she runs an organization, Ohio Families United Against Police Brutality. Okay. And then we have another brother who is a former City of Dayton employee himself. He's a lawyer. Jared Grandy is a part of the local organizing committee here. So I want to just name those people for the listening audience to know that certainly while I'm here speaking and we came together to put out the press release from Racial Justice Now, that is certainly not just the Zakiya show or the Racial Justice Now show. That's not how we operate. We operate in community and with the local organizing community. As I kind of shared earlier, I have relationships with these people, and my own organization was founded here in 2011. So based on all of that and what we know, we have all decided that those are the particular demands that you read that we need right now, because we need more information. Because Jared, who's the lawyer, the brother that's part of local ordinance committee, he said, if the mayor has not called us yet, if the city commissioners have not called us yet, and if this police chief have not called us yet to tell us that the pretext stop was based on him doing something, like somebody called on him, somebody was afraid, somebody was this, and it wasn't just the damn cops messing with him, racial profiling, pretext, let's just mess with him, then he said all bets are off. And so that's the information we have right now, because they have not said, here is the 911 call that such and such called and said this person was this, this, and this, and this, why the police. That. And so we're on the position that that didn't happen, and this was racial profiling, and until y'all prove otherwise, okay?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sister Zakiya, let me ask you a question, too, being that you a lot of your work started in the state of Ohio.
In Dayton specifically, yeah.
Now, Lincoln Heights, are you familiar with the situation that happened in Lincoln Heights where the community?
I'm very familiar with Cincinnati and Lincoln Heights, yep. Please
tell our listening, because I've tried to reach out to that brother. In fact, I might have to go through you if I can.
I actually don't know him. Yeah, I don't know him personally. I'm familiar with the history of Lincoln Heights. And let me just tell you, a lot of Black radicals are in Ohio. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, listen, there's a lot. There was Black. I was with a brother today, Michael Motley, who's also a part of our local organized committee. But he made sure we all knew that he was an original Black Panther during the Dayton chapter years ago. Mm-hmm. And so he was the one who was bringing in the history of police brutality. I have to say this because Sabrina shared it with me today. Just from the year 2000. Okay, there are 1,200 names just in Dayton that have been murdered by police. That's nuts.
You say, wait a minute, you said 1,200?
26 years, yes. It's 2026. That's all, go all the way back to 2000. Think about that. That's systemic, bro. Like, I mean, it's like that in other cities, but the point is, we have allowed the normalization of assassinations of Black men and boys in our communities. It's normalized. And a part of my mission, personally, is to unnormalize that shit.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sister Zakiya, let me go back to something that you mentioned. In fact, let me do it this way. Before I do that, because I don't want to, if the folks want to ask you a question or say something, I'm going to give them an opportunity before I kind of go, because we can still talk with you up until the time you got to leave. Let's go to a couple of these calls. Let's go to Dayton. It's a call here from Dayton, Ohio. Dayton?
All right.
Dayton, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Let's put him back on hold. Let's go to New York City. New York?
Hey, Elliot, put me back on hold. I'm in the middle of something.
All right, I'll do that. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News, question or comment for our guests?
All right.
Newport News?
Can you hear me? I'm on the phone.
Oh, yes, I hear you.
Okay, look, you know all I'm going to say is I tell you all the time in the back channel, I find talent, I stick to it because I like to know when I speak, I'm speaking on truth. I tell you that sister was fired, didn't I? So keep on putting in that work, young lady. I've watched you since my abolitionist days with Max Parthish, and he kind of introduced me to the work you were doing. So all I'm just saying is a senior, people recognize when you're doing the right thing. When you talk about being principled and integrity, I appreciate it. Keep putting in that work.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution. Sister Zakiya, before you go, let's spend some time on something you said earlier about the manipulations going on in our community. And it always centers around money. We know that the struggle for reparations is a debt that this country owes that we've never been paid for. And,
right.
And being that we've never been paid, a lot of our people, individuals, and organizations that are trying to form or that have formed are always in a position where they need funds.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the organizations are really not versed in providing those funds themselves or ourselves or generating money mm-hmm. among ourselves. And maybe that's mm-hmm. a blueprint that we need to go back and take a look at because mm-hmm. The Garvey movement and other movements didn't depend on other people funding them.
Right.
Black people funded these movements. But the mm-hmm. reason I'm saying that is because I shared with the listeners on Time for an Awakening a published report that a meeting that happened in New York City in February. And mm-hmm. a brother with a radio with a TV show up there in New York sent me this information. I'm going to share it with you to get your assessment of this, because being that you kind of move around to different organizations, you see some of our people that need funding. Some of them,
I'm one of them.
Some of them need it for the reasons as yourself. And then it's others out there that want to put portions in their pockets. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me share with you this couple of paragraphs from this published report.
Mm-hmm.
It came out of the Times of Israel. And the header says, U.S. Jewish organizations reassessing allies after October 7th betrayals, key Jewish leaders say. Now I'm going to read a couple paragraphs here. It says, American Jewish organizations are rethinking the value of traditional coalition-building efforts after many longtime allies punched us in the gut following October the 7th, 2023. The CEO of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, William Daroff, told the Times of Israel. Ahead of the organization's annual mission to Israel later this month, Daroff considered one of the most influential figures in American Jewry said that community leaders are rethinking how to press reset after the ceasefire and hostage return that brought Israel's two-year war to Gaza to a level of closure. For years, mainstream Jewish organizations have invested heavily in community relations work, building ties with African-American organizations, groups, labor unions, among others, Daroff says. They've joined coalitions on issues such as raising the minimum wage, civil rights, broader social justice agendas. Part of the purpose was basic decency, but there was also a strategic aspect, an expectation that when Jews face rising anti-Semitism or when Israel was under attack, those allies would stand with them. This does not mean turning, Meanwhile, Darif says, in the past 2 years have shown that Jewish organizations should pour more resources into doubling down on Jewish education and strengthening our people's identity and resistance. We need to ensure that our kids have self-confidence to talk about Judaism in Israel, so when they hit the college campuses as freshmen, they are not hit with challenges for the first time and have, hold on a second, no way to respond. Looking at the current landscape, Darif says, whose organization represents over 50 mainstream Jewish organizations from across the political spectrum, says that he sees a new level of unity and willingness to cooperate following the events of the past 2 years. So what this article is stating is that they wanted to reassess funding a lot of these civil rights, and I'm using air quotes, organizations. In fact, they mentioned African-American organizations because some of them didn't come out wholeheartedly for Israel in these events that has happened. So the rug has been pulled out on a lot of black organizations, causing them to scramble for funds. Talk about it. Talk about it from your perspective and seeing this happen, knowing that this exists. How are our people even navigating this? And I'm talking about sincere people that really want to help black folks, and that's been depending on other people's money to do this.
Well, other people's money, I will say this is ill-gotten wealth.
A lot
of these foundations, it is our money, okay? We know that these people use structures and laws and rules to rape people economically, and they get away with it. So I think, you know, that's number one in terms of the language that we're using around this. So the whole philanthropy, the money is ours any damn way. But suffice it to say, because of those rules in place, and because we have not, I mean, not even just black people, I mean, white folks are also, you know, they're going through similar things too as well with a lot of, I mean, other communities. Like, it has not just been, like, it's even bigger than philanthropy. What we really are experiencing is a reorganization of global capital. I mean, I know that it's still, you know, conspiratorial, I guess, even in 2026, but the new world order is real. I mean, it's Trump has accelerated it. The one thing that I think, and why he was allowed to be president again, is exactly what we're all experiencing. They knew that he had the whatever it is, he don't care about certain things, test this, go forward to whatever. He don't give a damn. He don't care who he hurt. He gonna do it. Whereas the other side may play around and you waiting on them to do this. He like, nah, we doing this. Yeah, we gonna bomb Iran. Yep, we gonna go steal a president from Venezuela. Yep, we gonna cut everybody off of consumer. I mean, it's been wild. And there's a term that I would tell listeners to go and research called full spectrum dominance. That's what we're all experiencing right now. And so I will say, from my perspective individually as a sincere person, is that I am still figuring it out, honestly. I'm literally still figuring out what is my pivot. But the one call to action that I will say, because you said it earlier, is that black people have to support our own people. We have to support our own organizations. Where are the modern-day Harry Belafonte's? Seriously. Like, where are our leaders that have some sensibility of wealth, or even just everyday people? Like, where's the love? Because one, the other thing that the Jewish community do is that they fund their own organizations. The ADL, the JDL, how many of them do they got? APEC? God damn, like, I mean, they ain't playing.
It said 50 came together just for that meeting.
They're not playing. And so that's what we need to be doing. Dr. John Henry Clark tried to do that. We have had efforts in trying, but it's our disunity, because you can always find one of us to get picked off and take a little $5,000 check, and then the rest of us fall apart instead of figuring out how we deal with traitors in our community. I mean, it's some stuff I'm not going to say on air.
No, I know.
Okay.
I know.
I mean, you know, it's just got to be serious, you know. So we really, really need a code in our community. We need people who are serious. And I would just say, you know, we got a lot of work to do. But one of the things that we can do is support our own. People can go to racialjusticenow.org and make a donation to Racial Justice Now to support the work that we do in these different regions. We doing work in Ohio, Maryland, and now Alabama. And a lot of times we're really national, because if it's an issue where I have a relationship, and I have relationships in all major cities in this in this country, if it's an issue that my support is called in on, I'm going. I mean, you know, if I have the resources. But I shouldn't have to calculate whether I'm going to have enough coins when there's an emergency to go help my people if my people already got me. Okay. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we done already established Zakiya and Racial Justice Now, we can trust them. That sister is sincere. Mm. Let's put our resources behind what they're doing. That's where we got to get to. Yeah, that's a part of it.
And this is just, I'm going to call it just for us in our exchange. You know, I want to get your
opinion.
Mm-hmm. And what Elliot was saying, and you reemphasize, is do you see the effect of the pullback of funding to?
I do. We've lost a lot of our funding. Yeah, we've had to lay off staff. We've had to cut programming. Yes, it's bad.
And is there, because of this, is there some discussion to your point as far as I don't know if you said, but where, like, we have to create a new way of organizing amongst it? Is that discussion taking place from your vantage point as far as amongst the organizations that are feeling this financial pinch?
So there's levels to it. I would say, you know, Racial Justice Now is not an NAACP. We're not an Urban League. We're not that. Like, we're not the ones, the legacy ones that ain't got to worry about no money, okay?
Right.
Then you have the mid ones who are more state-based. So you got the Ohio Unity Coalition. All they care about is voting, but they way more money than I got to do it. You know, they like one trick ponies, and it ain't even full civic. I mean, anyway, I don't want to.
Believe me,
So you have that. We are extremely grassroots. And what I mean by that is that we have never had a budget over $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize that? But look at the level of work that we do.
Right.
Like the level of love of sacrifice that you brought it up at the beginning of this call. My husband and I both, like, we got family, we got kids to feed, mouths to feed, bro. Like, these are real sacrifices that these families are making. Because Nakima and her husband have made sacrifices. So, like, we don't always talk about that because we're not trying to center ourselves. But I'm glad you're asking me these questions, because it's a very real reality that we're navigating right now.
And with the success of the target, and that the success is that people following through, because it, what I've seen is what I'm questioning is how the response to this corporate entity, and this goes to, you know, being able to support grassroots organization, but the response and seeing the effect. And I'm wondering, are that. I'm gonna call a social group of people realize that they're not just supporting a presidential candidate, you know, and coming up in 24, 48 hours with so many millions of dollars, or you know, divesting in consumer spending, you know, in order to you know, that you know, for a company to recognize that they are, you know, that they should be community partners, but that they should, this group do, you know, is this some indication that they will be looking at grassroots organizations, looking at the information that you're you're doing by your organization and saying, well, with the couple of dollars I have, or even the time I have, this is what, do you see that this might be this time right now for that type of redirecting to support grassroots organizations?
I think it's time for all of the above. We are clearly in a state of emergency. And for Black folks, we've been in one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? But yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, will, you know, because we see the signs of it. Now this mm-hmm. is what, you know, Elliot, you raised the point about the Garvey movement. We have other moments where, you mm-hmm. know, people, you know, ordinary people, Black people, realized that they had to give some support, even though they were dealing with their own challenges, in order to help organizers carry out their effort. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is these things an indication of that's a moment that's occurring again? Not just protesting, but supporting organizing effort. You know, that's what I guess the question I'm having. I'm just throwing it up there. And you're engaged in the work, so that's why I was raising it with you.
Yeah. What's the specific question, though? I want to make sure.
Is that people are the people who are boycotting, and will they actually now support grassroots organizations with the dollars necessary?
That's a good point. Because that was one of, and I hate to like switch it to this, but that was one of the things the Black-owned brands stated as well. Several of the Black-owned brands that I actually use, I'll be honest with you, before, you know, when I shopped at Target, Tabitha Brown and the sister that owns the lip bar, those were like the Target was the place I would go to buy it. And so now I have switched to go to their direct online store to buy it directly from them. But so you're saying that people who are boycotting and saving money, they should be making sacrifices to be giving $10-$15 maybe a month or however they can afford to help sustain. I 100% agree. And we need a national grassroots effort to really push that 100%. Right. Yeah.
And it used to be, you know, it was through the government agencies, local and national. Mm-hmm. Where you could be
I think the people that do that well are probably like the nation, like religious-based organizations. I think it's easier for them to do it, like churches.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's easy for people like that. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm paying tithes, or, you know, right. I'm giving, I think the nation call it charity. And for grassroots organizations, I think we got to get creative to figure out how to get our people to, you know,
sustain us.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I think that's something that as we go through this, we need to, as we see these successes, we need to bring up, as because these guys are organizing, you know, to say that their need to, you know, hold mm-hmm. back. So we need to be organizing to say how we're going to support. It doesn't matter what we got. It's a matter of
do we
have enough to keep those like yourself out there. And you make an important point in the sense that you want to still be able to produce and develop your own family. So that I recognize that, support, you know, the contribution and the sacrifice.
That's right.
Yes.
Sister Zakiya, before you go, just spend a couple minutes to give out all the particulars, how people can donate, the websites, how they can contact, and also highlight the press conference tomorrow. In Dayton.
Yes, sir. People can go to racialjusticenow.org /donate, make contributions there. We take contributions via Zelle and PayPal, but it's right there on the website if people, you know, feel so inclined, you know. We are a 501c3, and so that anything that they give is tax deductible. So that is something that's really important for people if they, you know, feel like that's, you know, a reason for them to give more. But in terms of the press conference, yes, we are on for tomorrow in front of City Hall, 3 p.m. We have sent it out to national media contacts as well as, of course, local media contacts. And so we are looking forward to standing together tomorrow as a community, as a Dayton community, and pressing the city and the police chief for more answers, for truth, for justice, and for accountability and transparency. So we're happy to keep you all posted. You know, this is just the protracted struggle. You know, my main goal is to prevent the next murder of a young Black man. That brother was the same age as I am currently that was murdered. And he was in his own community. He lived downtown Dayton. Everyone knew him. Like when you look, like you said, you look up the published reports, everybody that the media spoke with just were heartbroken. They said he didn't bother anybody. He was a good man. He rode his bike everywhere. And so for the police to do a pretextual racial profiling stop, we're not having that. No.
Sister Zakiya, the door is always open to you. Anytime you want to give us updates, come on and talk about some of these issues. The door is open to you.
And you take care. And you should tell your folks, like, they can be able to put a plate on the side for brother, man. I mean, I eat too.
I know that's right. Hey, man, I appreciate y'all so much.
Talk to you soon. Sister.
Y'all take care now.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Peace.
All right. We're going to take a brief break and we're going to transition into open forum. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today, 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI. Black Power. ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometz U Black family, to join your interconnected Kometz U Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com. IBBToMe.TV. IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend? You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
There are between 38 and 50 million people in the United States of America who are poverty-stricken, making income less than the poverty level. And yet, this is the richest nation in the history of the world. Our national gross product this year will go beyond $800 billion. And yet, there are between 38 and 50 million people who are poverty-stricken. Now, there's something wrong. A lot of people are afraid to say it. But I don't mind saying it. You see, somebody said to me the other night, don't you think, Dr. King, you are going to have to start speaking more in terms of the administration's policy? Because since you started talking against the war in Vietnam, it's hurt the budget of your organization, and people who once respected you don't respect you anymore. And I had to look over and say, sir, I'm sorry, but you don't know me. I'm not a consensus leader. I don't determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of my organization. And I don't determine what is right and wrong by taking a Gallup poll of the majority opinion. And so because there's something wrong, our struggle must continue.
Some of us see the United States as the righteous empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. Either you are on our side or you are on the side of evil. This is a war of good versus evil, and of course, our side is the good side. Our track record to the contrary notwithstanding. This is a war of right versus wrong, with our side being right, including our extermination of the Indians, our enslavement of the Africans, our training of assassins, our unqualified support for Zionism, our complete disregard of both the Palestinians and the United Nations resolution supporting the Palestinians, our suppression of third world peoples, and our disregard for the world's opinion about our racism and our refusal to discuss reparation for blacks and the victims of the West African chattel slave trade. No, our absolute arrogance in refusing to acknowledge any wrongdoing in the slave trade. We won't even say, I am sorry, and it's probably because we ain't sorry. Like I have said for years, if we repent, we just might have to repay. And we ain't about to repay. We can repay the Jews, we can repay the Japanese, but we ain't about to repay the Africans, because this is America. United we stand, and in God we trust. That's what you got on your money, but that ain't hardly what you got on your mind. What we trust in is the almighty dollar. Our money and our military. We are a righteous empire. Empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. And you're either on our side or you're on the wrong side.
for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:29 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Richard?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. I'm glad that we had Sister Zakia on, at least to give us an update on both of those things, you know.
And some I wanted to bring up to her, but we'll get her back on again. Because it relates to the brother that just got gunned down. Now, Richard, you know, although it don't make a difference how old he was, whether he was a young guy, but the man was 44 years old. He was riding his bike. And according to their own published report, it says the police stopped him because he didn't have a light on his bike. I mean, are you kidding me? See, but this stuff haven't stopped. It's just the focus on it has stopped among certain people. Because after George Floyd was killed, Breonna Taylor and Mona Arbery, the black public kind of forced black politicians to get involved in this thing and say something. So they put forth that George Floyd Policing Act, along with Protecting the Voting Rights Act with John Lewis, the John Lewis bill, and the issues behind the farmers getting the money that was so-called promised to them. All of those things went by the boards, and you don't even hear black politicians talking about it anymore. They're too focused on Epstein files and all this other stuff.
It's definitely something to be said in relationship to hear the amount of, you know, when she mentioned the amount of police shootings in Dayton, you know, over that period of time. It just seemed, now I don't know what would be considered a lot, but it just seemed a lot, Elliot. I mean, and if it's shootings like this, is this alleged one, and you raised the question, which they're trying to get to, you know, she didn't, I don't know if she spoke directly to it, of whether he was shot in the back. Because it didn't say that he was resisting anything.
No,
he just had no walked.
When he took off, that's why I kind of took liberty. It stands to reason that he was shot in the back.
No. It didn't say that he was involved in any particular kind of crime, or altercation.
No, well, they admitted in their own published report that the cops stopped him because he had his bike on the pavement.
That's wild. That shows a certain level of a mentality, right? In that police force, that I'm glad they have. You know, they're all organizing around that. But it's like you said, it's just something that we, from the public perspective, the general public, the national perspective, this should be something, you know, that we should be keeping in the forefront also. Because to me, it's just as devastating as it's still a war on us, like the war on Iran. You know, it ain't like, you know, the person did anything or could be proved to be done anything, but the attack is there. And here we are now and got to react to it.
Richard, I wanted to throw this out, but I'll just share it with the listening audience because it was a published report that was that came out 2 days ago. The header says judge dismisses charges against officers accused of falsifying warrant in Breonna Taylor raid. So we could see here that all of those charges now with all of those officers seem to be disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
It says two former Louisville Metro police officers will not face further prosecution for their role in the deadly raid on Breonna Taylor's apartment in 2020. Joshua James and Kyle Meany were facing misdemeanor charges for allegedly lying on the search warrant application seeking authorization for the botched raid. The prosecution of James and Meany by the U.S. Department began under former President Joe Biden, when the administration changed hands last year, Donald Trump, Department of Justice, backed off the officers involved in the Taylor killing. Assistant Attorney General Hamid Dhillon asked the court to dismiss the charges against the two officers last week. Only two other Louisville Department police officers involved in the raid faced criminal charges for their roles. Brandon Hankinson found guilty by a jury on 2024 for violating Taylor's civil rights. He was sentenced to 33 months in prison, but is currently at home while he appeals his conviction. Kelly Gottlieb, who was James' partner, pleaded guilty to felony conspiracy charge related to the search warrant. Gottlieb's sentence is currently scheduled for July 29th. Yeah, well, that'll probably be dismissed too, or time served. So, I mean, we see that this struggle continues. And the community are going to have to organize around these things on their own. Because the help from the folks that are supposed to be helping seems to be lacking. I'll just put it that way. Richard, give me some thoughts on, because we discussed some things in private conversation, and you was talking about some things related to what's going on now, the war in Iran and others. But go ahead. I'll just turn it over to you.
No, I'm, in the war, Ryan, I don't know if I've said this before, but what is it that we're seeing about the way Iran is fighting this asymmetrical warfare, right? In the sense of this whole thing of how prepared they were for this is the, I guess what I'm kind of looking at. And recognizing that they weren't going to be dealing with a ground troop. And I know there's talk now that Trump is talking about sending ground troops into Iran, and everybody's saying that that's like a bad thing. But the point of their whole military infrastructure producing the type of armament, what I see was interesting is, you know, the history of African people in dealing with armament from the West is that one side bought the armament in order to fight the other side. What Iran seemed to have done was create a series of armament that requires the infrastructure of Iran itself. They're now purchasing. They may be purchasing. I understand they're purchasing some parts from China or getting some information from Russia, but the types of drones and the ballistic missiles are basically constructions out of their own design, and United States and Israel wasn't prepared for that. I think that to me indicated some kind of strategic thinking from a offensive defensive perspective, and that was one thought that I had, Elliot, and it's showing, and then it's the what are they going after? They're going after not necessarily particularly. They're going after the allies, and I think we were making reference to that with Sister Zakia in the sense of the ops, right? When we're talking about at the grand military level, they're going after the allies that are supporting their effort. I don't know if that's what you were speaking to, Elliot, but I think that is another thing, because and the third element is that it's affecting the American, you know, the whole thing of they're not looking at the military effort in relationship to the warfare between armaments and men. They're going after the economic as the structural part of the economy. Some people say oil, But we also know it's about the fertilizer. So we also know it's a lot of other things that come through that street that is going to have, that it ain't going to have, it's having an effect on the general economy of America. And particularly it's having an effect on, will have an effect on, for me, African-Americans particularly, because the millions and billions of dollars that they're spending to engage in this, plus the inflation aspect of it, plus the, you mentioned, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, about the amount of jobs that's lost. Well, there's more jobs that's going to be displaced because of this warfare. This is a part of their strategy, their military strategy to have an effect. And I think that that's something else, that I see to look at in relationship to just that as far as the war effort. And I hope that, African Americans specifically, realize, that this is, that we can't just sit on the sideline. That's my thought, Elliot. I don't know if that's what you was speaking to.
Well, when you mentioned about sitting on the sideline, Richard, explain to me, go a little deeper than that. When you're talking about sitting on the sideline and our responsibility in this, because if you see the things going on now with the 2025. In fact, I wanted to get some of those clips ready because I didn't know exactly what time I guess we'll be leaving. I wanted to maybe I'll do it during the break. I wanted to get some of those clips about some of the, because they had a conference with three black mayors and a mayor of Baltimore talking about 2025 celebration. And, you see, Richard, you see it, that when they're doing this stuff, they're putting black people in the forefront of a lot of these discussions, and especially centering around celebration, this quote unquote war effort. You see black folks talked about or even featured. The propaganda is real. And that's kind of the question I had centering around, what you had mentioned before. But let me share this with the listeners, because all of this kind of goes together. This is a New York Times article that was shared with me. The header says, Army raises enlistment age limit to 42 years old and eases marijuana rules. It says a new enlistment requirements were made official by the Army because of the recruitment crisis the United States is engaged in war with Iran. The United States has officially raised its enlistment age limit to 42. From 35, and ease restrictions for people with marijuana convictions, a move that comes years after a period in which it struggled to meet its recruitment goals and as the country is engaged in war with Iran. The updated enlistment requirements published last week brings the service age requirements more in line with other branches of the military, including the Air Force, which raised its maximum age recruits to 42 from 39, and the Navy, which increased its cap to 41. The updated requirements go into effect April the 20th. Also allows the recruits with a prior conviction of possession of marijuana or drugs to forego a waiver from Army officials in order to enlist. Under the previous requirements, recruits with low-level marijuana convictions typically had to wait 3 years and pass a drug test or receive a waiver. So, what are you seeing there, Richard? Now, let me throw how I'm seeing this.
Right.
Because we've talked about on this program all African Americans that have lost jobs from the beginning of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Of the federal government, over 700,000 of people lost jobs, most of them black women. I read those stats last week. Right. About the, I think it was 500 and something thousand black men that has lost jobs. And the black youth unemployment is more than off the hook. It's atrocious, over 24%.
Mm-hmm.
And they consider youth 16 to 24, which, mm-hmm. I mean, you're over 21, you're a man.
Right.
So what is that saying, Richard? You know, any other time, this system that we live under, whether it was affirmative action, and now they want to run with this DEI, but the court, the Supreme Court didn't outlaw DEI. It outlawed affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the pretense of giving black folks opportunities, it extended to a certain amount of black people. There was a limit to it. And when you had these jobs or whatever, they always looked at you with a jaundiced eye.
Mm.
He was affirmative action hire. Now, you know, they use now, he was a DEI hire. But when you're, when black people are out of work, especially adult males.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether you're talking about a man 22, 21, 23, or 24, or a man 40, 44, when they're out of work, now all of a sudden, they can go into service.
Mm-hmm.
It's no affirmative action there, no DEI there. You can come on in. If you had drug conviction, marijuana or other paraphernalia, it's going to be waived. Who is that directed towards?
Well, it's definitely directed towards the, well, really now, you know, for that increase in age, it would be directed towards those young, those middle age, but now would be considered middle age people, right? Who can be able to go, if they hadn't gone in, they would be able to go in. But when you mention one quarter of the young black male population is unemployed, you know, I have to say, Ellie, the thing that comes to my mind is that they're willing to now take in this surplus, and I hate to look at it as labor, and bring it in to the military system. Okay. Even if the most of the military system is support. That's how they, you know, they, because there's nothing for them to do out here. You were going to say something.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
And so you have two different age population, that 18 to 24 and that, like, 34 to 42. These are two populations of, and I'm always just looking at black, you know, black people, black male. And in this case, it'll be black males and females who really are not prepared because there's nothing out there in the economy for them to build on. When I say build on, to be able to either create a working career to where they could be able to get married, buy the basic things. You need, in America, you need a car. You need some place to stay. So what this is that they're saying, they're using this to bring Cypher off that population. And even saying, even if you were dabbled in smoking weed, or even, you know, which reminds me of the Vietnam era when they were, you know, people were getting locked up and they gave them that choice about going to either you go to jail or go to war. You know, this sounds like the same kind of thing again, where a large population of productive black males who could become community organizers, could be developing the community because with the, you know, with the energy that they have, the creative energy they have, they're ciphering them off to go to the military. That's my first thought, Elliot. You know, to take them, because it becomes a destabilizing effort. They won't be protesting. They won't be demanding protesting as far as the police brutality and deaths, unnecessary deaths and harassment, and, you know, protesting in relationship to, you know, this whole thing of why are we engaged in war and you can't build no housing or you can't build no jobs that I could be able to have. That ciphers off that energy into the military, or that population into the military. And that raises those two different age groups, that 18 to 24 and that 34 to 42, you know, who haven't been in it. And the 34 to 42 are the most dangerous because they got more experience out here on the street. That's my first reaction, Alex, if it makes any sense.
Yeah, because I don't see that as directed towards no white man or young white man or even middle-aged white man. It's not. Because they've already been tacitly complaining about their zero population growth. So they don't want the white men losing their lives fighting in these wars that they get started, trying to take somebody's resources. It's clear that they're waving those things to get more blacks to join the military. So they can
it'll definitely be a higher percentage of, you know, per population wise that will look at that as an option, you know, in my mind.
Yeah, especially if they don't have anything, if they're not working.
Right.
But I you know, I just because, you know, when that was shared with me by Brother Carver, I immediately you can just like Sister Zakiya was saying about reading these people. You know, you've been around long enough. You can read their moves. I mean, come on, man. What? Are you kidding?
Yeah, and the thing is, as black people globally are, and in these other nation states, the Caribbean islands and Africa, you know, and South America are now, these young black people are now, you know, demanding, you know, more for themselves and trying to some degree to delink from the Western colonial powers. You don't want young African Americans to be asking the question at once again, and we've done it in the 50s, we've done it in the 20s, we've done it in the 1890s, we've done it after, you know, like, we need to self-organize on our own. You don't want them asking that question. You want them to say, well, at least I got some place to go. And the military being that place, compared to, yeah, we need to be organizing in our own effort and solving our own problems. Like we were saying, you know, how do we fund ourselves? How do we feed ourselves? You know, how do we have this gentrification and we get put out into areas further away from us being able to be in community with each other. How do we do that with limited resources?
Richard, we see that the Ghana was here. Well, they're making the tour, the African right. Union, and I guess Ghana was kind of the point on this because, you know, a lot of the folks that we have had coming through the program over the past year and a half has spoken about these moves that we see coming to fruition now.
Right.
They were in Colombia with the South-South Conference presenting the same thing, and they were on, in fact, we could see that the Caribbean certain South American nations that wasn't here represented when Trump called some of them,
right,
was all on board with what was presented at the UN earlier this week. Let me read this published report from the Washington Post and get you your thoughts. The header says UN calls for reparations to remedy the historic wrongs of trafficking enslaved Africans. The UN General Assembly on Wednesday of this week adopted a resolution declaring the trafficking of enslaved Africans the gravest crime against humanity and calling for reparations as a concrete step towards remedying historical wrongs. The resolution also urged the prompt and unhindered restitution of cultural items, including artworks, monuments, museum pieces, documents, and national archives, to their countries of origin without charge. The vote in the 193-member world body was 123-3, with 52 abstentions. Argentina, Israel, and the United States were the three members voting against the resolution. The United Kingdom and all 27 members of the European Union were among those that abstained. While the United States opposed the past wrongdoing of the transatlantic slave trade, it does not recognize the legal right to reparations for historic wrongs that were not illegal under the international law at the time they occurred, says the U.S. ambassador before the vote. The United States also strongly objects to the resolution's attempt to rank crimes against humanity in any type of hierarchy, he said. The assertion that some crimes against humanity are less severe than others objectively diminishes the sufferings of countless victims and survivors of other atrocities throughout history. Now, I don't know what that deflection is all about.
It's interesting you said that, Elliot, because as I'm trying to, the question I said to myself, well, what does that mean? Yeah, but yeah.
I mean, that's a stupid, idiotic statement of deflection. Mm. But, you know, let's go back. See, because you hear constantly from black elected officials, a couple of weeks ago, and I know that, you know, I know she's sincere. It just seeing her work, I'm kind of, you know, because I care for my people, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Julianne Malvo was on with Carl Nelson a couple of weeks ago, and she was mentioning about Trump, and he's ostracizing our European allies. And I called up in reference to the statement that she made, and she kind of like backtracked on it, which is no problem. But the reason I'm saying that is because of this. It says that the United States, and you know it was a strategy between the U.S. and their European brothers.
Right.
It says the United Kingdom and all 27 members of the European Union were among those that abstained. So, you know, these black elected officials, they keep talking about our European allies, but they don't see nothing wrong with the crime against humanity that they participated in. Mm-hmm. But they're your allies. They're supposed to be our allies.
Mm-hmm.
They're speaking for themselves. They're not speaking for me or millions of black people across this country. They don't see European nations as black people's allies. But that's the problem when you have black leadership seeing them as our allies. Well, your allies just stated unequivocally that they don't see what they did to your ancestors, which is us, as a crime against humanity. And not only them, America, the European brothers that are here, that black elected officials is talking about get ready for 2025 so we can blow firecrackers and wave pom-poms. This nation said that what we did to black people was not a crime against humanity. And Israel, that's supposed to be a friend of black people, they always been your friend. They joined America saying, absolutely not. It was not a crime against humanity. I mean, what's wrong with that picture, Richard? It's something wrong with that picture. And if you notice, how many black elected officials have you heard say anything about that UN vote?
I haven't seen anything yet. Have you seen anything? You watch more than I do.
Yeah, I watch TV, and I haven't seen anything. But I know you on social media a lot more than me. Have you seen any of them address?
Not by the elected officials, no. I've heard people say when they went through New York, you know, to the African burial ground, and even then I didn't hear any black elected officials. I just heard, the regular cast of characters, Sharpton and others, but I didn't hear any of them make no reference to that, or have made any reference. I haven't heard anybody say anything that. But you know, Elliot, if I may, that the first what the United States said as far as what was legal at the time, I think that that's important. Well, for me, in my way of thinking, I wanted to see how you responded also in the sense of they're saying because slavery was a legal action in America, because we're just talking about the African Americans who got here by slavery and those and all the laws that supported it up to what, 1865, right? That those things were legal. And they can't be held, correct me if I'm wrong, this is, I guess, my complete thought, they can't be held accountable because it was legal. Is that opening statement that the ambassador made is what they're saying?
Let me read to you what he stated before the vote was taken. It says, while the United States opposes the past wrongdoing of the transatlantic slave trade, it does not recognize a legal right to reparations for historic wrongs that were not illegal under international law at the time they occurred. That's what he states.
Now, so up to, so we could say from when we're talking about 250 in 2026, they could say from 1776 up to 1865, slavery as a part of the economy was a legal in relationship to international law, and international law is really, that's where the European allies come in at, right? That they had international agreements amongst themselves, right? That slavery was a legal thing, so they're not held accountable for that. They can't be held accountable for that. Would that be a correct thought to that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and who made that law? They were a law, right, to themselves.
Right. That's what I'm saying. The agreement amongst them, when you talk about international law, now we don't have the League of Nations or the UN yet, but you have in relationship to treaties and agreement between European nations particularly, because the African nations were under, the continent was under colonial rule, right? The Caribbean was under colonial rule, except for Haiti, right? And a lot of different countries, which we call countries now or states, they were under colonial rule. So when you say international law, at that period when slavery was legal, the only ones who had international agreements would be the European powers. Now, maybe I don't have enough history or enough understanding to, you know, say that for a fact, but that's what it seems to me, right? So they're saying that we can't be held accountable for that because it was legal. So what are, and that was the most devastating moment. Like, we've had periods after 1865 that up to now that's been devastating. We talked about the police shootings and all. But from 1776 to 1865, I mean, we got breeding. We got dehumanization as far as human property. So all of that can't be accounted because all of that was legal.
Well, I mean, and it was a slave society. And according to the historical accounts, I think, and maybe Tom for Wickney listeners can correct me, it's only been five slave societies that have ever been created since mankind. They've been dealing with records. And four of them have come out of European society. They've created them. So you got generations of people that's going to always be a slave. Their children going to always be a slave. That, I mean, that was a crime against humanity.
Right.
But they're saying now that it's not.
Right. Excuse me. Go ahead.
They're saying that it's not.
Right.
Which leads me to ask this question. If you look at Europeans' history, are they immoral or amoral or a mixture of both? Because there's a separate meaning to both of those words. Now, I'll do this. Immoral. Knowing, violating moral principles. While amoral means having no moral sense or indifferent to right and wrong. So immoral is, you know the right thing to do and you decide to do wrong. Amoral is no concept between right and wrong, and you don't care one way or the other. So my question is, throughout Europeans' history, have they been immoral or amoral or a mixture of both?
Ellie, yeah, that's a rough one. I mean, and speaking for me, right, And I see myself going through a whole lot of mental gymnastics, right?
Well, listen, go ahead, finish your point.
Yeah, because they would say they are a moral people.
Oh, I know that.
Right? So the question becomes, by who morality should we answer that question from? Because if we answer it from their frame of reference, what they did, they see no wrong in it. And they justified it. But if we operate from our frame of reference, those who were the captives of this enslavement process and define morality from our frame of reference, they were not only immoral, but amoral.
Okay.
So they would.
Okay. It's too much history or evidence to the fact that the scales of justice, so to speak, is leaning towards amoral, lacking any morals. Because when you do this to a people and put what they did to our people aside for just temporarily, when you look at what they did to Native Americans, millions of people here, and right. Wait a minute, not just the people, not just human beings. They did that to species of animals.
Just
wiped them out just because they could. I mean, when you look at that, that's crazy. You like, what the hell is the matter? What is going on? They did it to humans and animal species in this continent. They sailed over to Hawaii and seen people there and did almost exactly the same thing. Europeans went to Australia and almost wiped those people out.
Right.
I mean, they did that to a lot of different places. Mexico. With the Aztecs and the Incas. Totally wiped people out.
Right.
And then leave a mixture of Spaniards and the remainder of people. I mean, the things that they did borders on amoral instead of immoral.
I can see that, and I, you know, like as you crystallize that for me, it just, you know, you hear me say emphasizing
why it's so important for where that judgment of even being amoral come from. That comes from our center of what is right and wrong. Because again, I don't think they see it. The civilization, the civilizations that they said they were, their basis of their civilization, when they even, the Portuguese or the Spanish, you know, popes said, as they killed off the indigenous in South America and those people, they said, well, get the Africans because they had no soul. So it'll be okay. That was the moral authority writing the edict. So they were doing it, and as they seen it, in the name of God.
Yes.
Their God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's important if we're going to, you know, like, you know, of whose center, because if we adapt their center, then we'll be saying, well, you know, they, you know, making that choice, you know, in relationship to us. But if we stay centered as the ones who have been harmed, destabilized, but still have a sense, our own sense of what is right and what is right, like we could see that it was to be in commune with nature, to have a certain type of relationship with each other, you know, that's not to be, as you say, we're here, not to kill off everything and then try to create new things to do the same thing. I mean, that's insanity. That ain't about immorality. That's about insanity.
That's what, exactly. Exactly.
You're going to devastate what you need in order for your own survival. And then try to come up with some artificial stuff to compensate that. And when you first raised the question, the image came to my mind, you know, the image came in my mind, they dropped a nuclear bomb on a people.
Oh, you know what, Richie, you must have read my mind. Let me play this here. It's something that Nelson Mandela said when he was still in the physical form. Let me play this.
And if there is a country that has committed unspeakable atrocities in the world, it is the United States of America. They don't care. They don't care for human beings. 57 years ago, when Japan was retreating on all fronts, they decided to drop the atom bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Killed a lot of innocent people who are still suffering from the effects of those bombs. Those bombs were not aimed against the Japanese. They were aimed against the Soviet Union to say, look, this is the power that we have. If you dare oppose what we do, this is what is going to happen to you. Because they are so arrogant, they decided to kill innocent people in Japan who are still suffering from that. Who are they now to pretend that they are the policemen of the world? What I'm condemning is that one power with a president who has no foresight, who cannot think properly, is now wanting to plunge the world into a Holocaust.
Yeah, yeah. And he said that, and the present president wasn't president at the time.
I know it. Exactly.
So we ain't talking about the president of the time being what his
inclinations is. We're talking about a system that does this.
Yes. Yes. With the same people basically doing it.
Right.
Now, that was him saying that. That these folks care nothing about human life. So it ain't me. I'll put it this way. I'm agreeing with Nelson Mandela in the statement that he made.
So the question, you know, when we, you know, to the resolution that was placed before the UN, you know, Elliot, what I've been saying, it's not. It, that resolution, as you said, they had a meeting in Colombia. They've been having a series of meetings before then in relationship to dealing with, you know, African nations, South American nations, and the Caribbean nations, talking about reparatory justice and repair and reparations. You know, and we have to look. I mean, to the time for waking up, I'm one who don't look at just reparations of what they owe us more than the repair, which I see reparation as, is what we owe ourselves to get out of this mess. And that's what I see, that those, the Southern Hemisphere, Elliot, and putting forward, they're drawing the line once again against the, they knew what those countries who were going to abstain and those countries who were going to say no was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that, right? But they wanted to be clear that they were, by the votes of the ones who voted, that they were in alignment with each other about what they're doing. And what is that they're doing? They're coming together and they're asking, you know, they're asking for... Not only, they don't just want the cause it, I think it said, it ain't just money. They don't just want money as a part. They want their stuff back because those, a lot of that stuff was sacred ornaments that they took and put in museums. They weren't just, you know, art. That was representations of their culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of who they are, of the moral position that they represent, right? They want that back. But they were making clear that they were working together across the continent with each other. That is frightening to the past colonial and past, as you said, the slave economy that America had built. That to me was, they're putting them on notice that they ain't working as independent states asking for reparation. They're working as a part of the global Southern Hemisphere. Because they see what they're being challenged with. So that's what, and to me, Elliot, that is a sign of victory. That, you know, we talk about, because African Americans, you know, we couldn't make a vote one way or another as far as our sentiment. Why? To the things that we keep talking about. Because we're not organized as a people in the United States of America. So when United States Ambassador says, makes this thing, well, legal and illegal, that's really discounting us.
Well, it is. But Richard, that statement in itself is ludicrous. But I'm going to keep beating that same drum. I don't care who don't like it. If you're an African-American leader in this country, whether you're a senator, congressman, whatever, and you hear that, he's supposed to be speaking for the United States. When he said, well, we don't see that as a crime against humanity. Do you agree with that?
All right.
And if you don't, where's your backbone? No. I don't agree with that. That happened to my people, my ancestors. We're still suffering from that psychological damage. It's clear. So you let this man speak for you, saying, well, that wasn't a crime against humanity. It wasn't legal at the time. I mean, you got to be kidding me, Richard.
There's no way
you can justify this. I don't care who don't like it. It's no way you can justify this. You cannot justify this. But when you turn on Black Talk Radio, oh, I can't wait for Jeffries to be Speaker of the House. I can't wait for the, the young lady that just lost down in Dallas. I'm just using names.
Crockett,
Benny Thompson, or Barack Obama, any of them, go down the list. Ain't none of them said nothing about this. None of them said anything about this, that they go along with it or object. And plus, their silence is betrayal. Dr. King said that. I ain't say that. Their silence is betrayal.
Yeah, we're in the middle and just free associating, you know, when you raised about, you know, in this moment, the possible draft, the possible young or middle-aged young men and women that will be drawn into the military, because that becomes another re-education process. When you talk about here, they're talking about, we don't want you to really be reading Toni Morrison or be orientated to critical race theory or have any semblance of placards that, you know, in the national park where it would show the founders who were slave owners of this nation state. You know, that you, we don't want that to be displayed. And, you know, and if you want it to be displayed, you got to go through some kind of court action. And that's just for a picture of the origin of this 250 year, the origin of this 250 year project, that slavery was the foundational basis of wealth. You know, held within Black bodies in a large portion of the origin nation states of this nation state. Black bodies, you know, was like almost 40, what, I forget the actual number, but 60% of the wealth of America from 1776 up to 1865. You know, That was property that had no significance, and we're not held, and we can't look at them as human beings, and therefore we don't have no moral code, to your point, to address that, because it was legal. And our fellow trading partners, they've seen it as legal, because they did trade with us in spite of it. England, France, Spain, those particular, Denmark. And that, just in that period, that period is wiped out. As far as we're supposed to see that as a period that we ain't got nothing to say. Now, after that, you could deal with Jim Crow. You can deal with, your housing. You could deal with unemployment. You know, you could deal with the notion of segregation. You could deal with all that. You know, we'll consider that. But that period that created the basic foundation of wealth, And what should base the foundation on what is universal right and wrong, as it relates to a crime against humanity, not a grant against a particular people, but against humanity. that we don't adhere to that kind of universal code of right and wrong on that case.
And we're supposed to be silent? Coming to your point about the people we represent is supposed to be silent because we are it's still being up for consideration, are citizens of the United States. So the people we, through our votes, they can't have any oppositional, no public oppositional voice in relationship to the people they represent, that represents them, that they represent.
And it's clear, Richard. It's clear.
Yeah.
It's clear.
I'll give them out, Elliot, because they may not represent the people. They may just represent the state.
Well, wait a minute. They do represent the state or the government. They do. Mm-hmm. But they're supposed to represent your views. They're supposed to represent the people. Mm-hmm. But it's clear that they're not. There's no way that you can sit and let a statement like that go by the boards and you don't have no response. None. They didn't have, listen, when that war broke out, they didn't have no response in reference to that war being morally right or wrong. The only thing they said was, oh, they didn't come to Congress to get an approval. What? What about the bombing of schools that the United States admitted that they did? Apartment buildings. Hospitals. See, when Israel was doing it, they were saying, oh, soldiers in the hospital, and that's why we did it. They used an excuse. It ain't no excuse being said now. Just doing it. No response.
Starving out Cuba. Cuba, you can't say Cuba have made any military affront to the security of the United States.
And when you cause when you're causing these blackouts, Richard, it's hospitals there. Cuba is they're known worldwide for the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got incubators, if you got breathing machines, anything, they can't run.
Mm-hmm.
So you got all of those other things that spin off from these blackouts. But their response is, yeah, after we're done over here, we coming to get you. If that's not amoral, not immoral, if that's not amoral, I don't know what is.
And every time we get to this point, I think it's important, even with the guest we had with Sister Zakiya, when she raised about, this is a characterization, but I think it's a true characterization, even in what took place at the aftermath of, or during the UN by a certain group of African Americans, when she made the point of ops, because there are people who are saying, since we are Americans, that what the American nation state is doing or saying, the doing in creating the blockout, the bombing of, places where school children are, even though they have an experience of bombs being placed in churches, that's in recent history. We ain't talking about ancient history as far as African American, where white people put bombs and blew up young girls. Or white boys in the name of whiteness goes into a church and gun down a whole congregation. So we ain't talking about no past thing that they see in being Americans that's okay. These are African Americans who believe this, who support this. So how do we look at them? They're not necessarily in governmental positions. They can be. They're supposed to be ordinary citizens. So shouldn't be raising the same question about, well, what is their morality? or because, you know, in real politics, it ain't about morality. You know, when they was debating about, you know, the whole thing of slavery during that 1787, you know, the guy, I think it was from North Carolina, South Carolina, said, look, this ain't about morality. This is about interest. You talking right and wrong, and I'm talking about my interests, and that property is my interest, and I'm not going to have you take it away from me. Mm. And they make a compromise. Is that what African Americans are? You know, we ordinary citizens. Is that what we're saying? That it to be practical, because we are Americans. You know, that a Ghanaian president and those African and Caribbean representatives at the UN, you know, they stealing our reparations. How the hell? Maybe I'm going off, Elliot. I'm back up.
Listen, we'll take a brief break when we come. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, with a question, comment, anything you want to say. By dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Okay.
See, it does not profit black people or poor people anything to have the vote and not be able to select the candidates who they want to choose. Now, how can you choose between Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Agnew, Wallace, and Humphrey? There is no choice. Evil is evil. There's nothing in between that. I think the vote can only be used as a tool of organization. We can only use the vote to organize our people. Now, to really believe that we can put someone in office and that these people would be responsive to our needs is naive, politically naive. Because even if one of the black candidates who ran for office was to take the office of president, then black people must be prepared to fight against that person.
Why?
Because, you see, the system mandates the action of the individual. The individual does not determine how this country will function. This country works off the military-industrial complex, which means that it's profitable to wage war. And unless you, you know, devise another plan, another scheme to sustain, to boost this economy, then it's going to be necessary to wage war. Whether, you know, a black individual is in office or a white individual is in office. Well, so we're talking about a complete, a change in system.
The system is rotten to the core. That's why every time we have had a presidential election, whether it's white or black, you always have to choose between the lesser of two evils. So you either vote for Satan or the devil, and you catch hell with either one.
This included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear.
One black man believes in violence, one believe in integration, one believe that one day after we all marry white women, we'll all be a light brown color and there'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believe, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it. Cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
You know, we really are being colonized. In a colony, the education is controlled from outside. The politics is controlled from outside. The economics is controlled from outside. The police in a colony are not there to serve and to protect, but there to keep the colonized ones from disturbing the status quo. The question is, do we want to continue to live as a colony, or do we want to be like the original 13 colonies and decide that we've had enough? Let's break from a colonial past and let's seek freedom.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:38 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. We got 21 more minutes left into the program. So if you got anything that you want to throw out, you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 32. Hey, Richard.
Yes, yes.
I want to, if I could get this thing queued up. It's some comments. They had a mayor's forum, some type of congressional panel where they brought some mayors there about a week ago. And they had a panel there of the mayor from here, Parker, a mayor from Virginia, a black mayor from Colorado, and the white mayor from Baltimore. And they were talking about preparing for this 2025.
26. This 26, Elliot. We already passed 25.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, 250 or whatever. 250, whatever it is. So, well, whatever. Yeah, you're right. You got me, Richard. So, listen, we didn't hear the stuff that Parker be talking about. I think that she come be on another planet after time. But I want you to listen to what the mayor of, I think it's Harrisonburg, Virginia, stated about how they're preparing to celebrate the 250 years of America. I think this is it. I hope I got this thing.
I also want to touch on your communities and how they've been getting involved in this celebration. So could you share a little bit with us?
Sure. So, you know, Harrisonburg is already an engaged community. And so I can talk about Harrisonburg all day because that's actually my hometown. And what makes Harrisonburg special is that we're 56,000 in population. So, you know, we still consider maybe a small town, but we're really not. We have two universities in Harrisonburg. James Madison University is our state university, and Eastern Mennonite University is our private university. But what makes Harrisonburg special is out of that 56,000 people that we have, is joining in with what's already being done. So I have a list here. You know, I have to make sure I follow this list so people get mad at me, because if I go off script, it goes the wrong way. So I'm going to stick to what I have here. We already had the reading of the Declaration of Independence. We have the historical walking tour that's done by Bridgewater Historical Society. We have the We the People exhibit is hosted by Rocktown History, and a Living History Demonstration Day at Fort Harrison and nearby Dayton. And then, of course, with James Madison University right in our backyard, JMU has also done some incredible partnerships and events. They hosted several programs during our kickoff weeks, which was with students and community members, and they had a birthday bash for their namesake, President James Madison. And so we're going to continue to highlight those events. We also had the Virginia 250 Mobile Museum that came to Harrisonburg High School. So we're going to continue to highlight those events as we go throughout this year's celebration.
Great. So, Council President Cohen, can you share how...
Richard, let me... you were able to hear some of the things she stated.
Yeah.
They're going to have the reading of the Declaration of Independence. They're going to have a walking tour of some of these historical sites there. I assume they're talking about Civil War sites. They're going to recognize the birthday of James Madison. You heard that?
Right.
Now, wait a minute. The last time I checked, Richard, I mean, this guy, what was he, the third, fourth president? I don't know. He was a president of this country.
Right.
But he owned slaves. He owned over 100 of our ancestors. I mean, this man, what are you talking about? You're going to recognize his birthday. And you're saying it with a smile on your face. See, it's something wrong here. I'm not living in an alternative universe. It's something wrong with some of our people's thinking. It really is. Now, listen, if you want to be colonized, that's your right. That's up to you. But you can't push that on, especially our children. They don't deserve that. They really don't.
That's the message they want to promote.
I'm coming to. Go ahead. Finish your thought, Richard.
That's the message they want to promote. Go ahead.
Let me go to Newport News here. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
You might be on the other one.
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay, I just want to raise my hand and tell you, you're onto something, but what you're not realizing is what she just read off to you. That's why I put it in the chat. This has already been planned by the national board under from 2025, what these localities are going to do. All of this, like here where I am, I told you the Golden Triangle, they haven't mapped out what each one of these places are doing. This is all coordinated. Tourism at its max. I mean, the Constitutional Center that's right behind where I live, it has all kinds of free, open to the public things, but it also has its time blocked off for national news and all that. This is coordinated, brother. These people don't have what she just read to you. You thought she was being cheeky, but she was being honest with you. You hear what she said? I got to get this right. If I don't get this right, what I'm saying to you is, it right here in Virginia where I am, each one of these specific places like Harrisonburg, Newport News here, York County here, they all have a program that's been handed to them. That's what she said. I can't just, she was actually being honest with you. I can't vary from this script. This is what's planned. So there is no individuality. And to be honest with you, I've been trying to say this for a long time. These people are onto it. They know exactly what they're doing. And as a matter of fact, I'm still trying to find out how many millions they've spent on this Colonial Parkway that I keep telling you about, the Golden Triangle, the Colonial Triangle. They just spent millions redoing the parkway, which is an aggregate and stuff strong enough to have army tanks roll on it. They spent millions getting this right before this 260 celebration in July. People are where I live, they're talking about leaving the state when that mess, because white folks like to celebrate their heritage.
Wow.
It's real. It's real. And up to this point, one thing that I know is here, it's been a push to trying to get from the community perspective a historical narrative. And one thing they've been doing is kind of trying to create local tours. But what I'm, I might not have it clear myself. How do we project the story? And I think you raised it, Elliot, in relationship to the moral question. Because it seems that African-Americans, when we're talking about looking over 250 years of being in America, that we should be projecting the story from that moral narrative of what is right and wrong.
As a senile old man, let me say this to you.
Right.
I just finished telling you, they do not have that liberty. Let me say this to you. Can you remember when Essence Magazine wanted to sue the black bar down in New Orleans? Because when they came in town, that bar and that hairdressing place had no right to offer the people any kind of entertainment because Essence had bought up the city. This is the same thing that's going on a national basis. You keep saying we need a way to do it. No, let me say to you, these people have figured out the way to squelch anything you have to do is we will give scripted narratives. In other words, it's any kind of forethought or planning from a local organization is wiped out. If you're an elected official, here's a program. Use preachers to the people and make sure you don't get it wrong, because here's the thing. This is what Roland Martin gets right. What you don't understand is all of the people that were consultants of this are getting paid. So they got to make sure the numbers are up. It has nothing to do with you and your actual patriotic sense of things. No. You need to shut up and pay attention to the script, and then we'll tell you what to think. It's just that well thought out. So when you're talking about what we can do for a narrative, for one thing, we got to step back and define the goals and what it is we're actually, quote, working for. Because some of us are really confused out here, man.
I agree with that.
No disrespect. I'm saying some of us are confused.
I agree with that, and I agree. And maybe I hear what you're saying, and I know what I've been saying here in relationship to doing it. And I know how difficult it is. And I agree that they do have a script, and they are paying people. I mean, I've been engaged with, you know, grants that were given in order to put together, you know, and then here they wanted to make sure that they have supposedly neighborhood participation. So it's I realize that, but I still see that. And I'm not talking about the people who take the money or who are part of, like, the elected officials or who are part of the structure, who do have a script that they must hear. I'm saying those of us who are not, that we should have we should be able to put something together, small or large, that be able to narrate how we see this last 250 years has been. That requires us having the ability to self-organize and creating that narrative. If that makes sense, that's what I'm saying that we can do. We must do. Or we'll be.
Let me say this, because I'll put this in here, because y'all let me speak, so I'm going to get it in here and mess up everything for the next 5 or 6 weeks. I've been looking back at when I talk about some of us being confused. I'm an old dude, and I'm going to tell you, I got a little petty in me. And I laugh because I look at Greg Carr. I have an ultimate respect for that man. He's a human encyclopedia. But I also see where his collaboration with my man Nick Cannon, it kind of went astray, didn't it? he had his class sessions with Nick Cannon. Remember when Nick Cannon got all messed around, running his mouth about Jews, and he got tapped upside the head? Well, Carr came in with him, coming from Mecca at Howard, and got with him and had class and session with him. Now, have you seen the latest of what Nick did with that?
Running
around with the Amber Girl or whatever her name is. You know, I'm too old to even keep up with who the hell they are. But he done completely flipped the script again and right back. Our problem with black people is not what white folks oppression is. It's us the niggas. Dysfunctional Negroes. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah. I see.
Some of our people are seriously confused, man. And no disrespect. The interesting thing I think is so funny is when you have these discourses, like with the young lady you had on earlier, when I give her the highest praise, because I see her interacting with the public and see they're taking her foolishness. But there's some of these leaders out here that this is all just personality pimping. They're not taking it serious. They come to the internet to have conversation about serious subject matter, but they don't want to be serious about whether or not their integrity and truthfulness is in what they're saying.
Okay.
They just want to get a laugh or get some hits, and they're not taking it serious. And it's bad. Some of our people are really confused. And I laugh because, like I said, I talk to some of them, and first thing out of their mouth when you confuse them with the truth, you owe this and that. And it's like, hold on. Do you understand? That's not a flex to talk to a human being about growing old. You kind of just tap out and sit in the corner. You don't need to be in the conversation. You see what I'm saying with it? They don't get it. If you tell them a truth that is not going along with what they've eaten up from the public, then they do just what that sister did. She'll read that thing and she'll tell you the truth. I can't get this wrong, because if I get this wrong, my funds are going to be cut off. That's what's important, whether or not she read that economic script right, not whether or not she's morally representing you when she finds out there's a data center going in and she keep quiet and and wait till the whole contract is signed before she lets you know. Then she stand out there and tell you they're doing us wrong. Y'all keep putting in that work, man.
Thank you for your contribution. Wow, Richard.
Hey, Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Listen, excuse me for breaking in, but I would just like to know, you had mentioned something earlier, you or Richard, about morality of the white man. When in history has the white man ever had any goddamn morality? Do they really understand the nature the meaning of the world?
I never mentioned him having morality. I asked the question whether he.
You asked what was the blend of the mixture, didn't you?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but the bottom line is she doesn't have an ounce of morality and never will have morality on this planet. I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of our people don't understand the history of this evil, wicked devil. I mean, you know, we talk about he's a devil and this and that. But if you ever study how he came into existence between himself and human beings and his behavior, he's always been a psychopathic, murderous, evil individual. I mean, it's just history. You just have to look at it. You know, I always get a kick out of when I hear the so-called FBAs and the rest of these characters talk about black people and how black people sold us into enslavement. Mm-hmm. You know, the sad thing is, it's much bigger than that. You know what I mean? African people did not see ourselves as selling each other into slavery. The misconcept is that we sold ourselves in a sense of trade, which became colluded and evil and wicked because of the existence and the behavior of the white man. But that's for another day and another time. But it needs to, at some point in time, really be addressed. And this is why I always laugh when I hear them talk about reparations, because of their misconcepts and their dishonesty about a lot of things. It's the reason why people laugh at them and they ain't gonna give them reparations. But what I really want to say is this. Are we, as a community, preparing ourselves for the evil that's about to happen within the next 2 weeks? The absolute genocide of the Iranian people, on top of what done happened to the Palestinian people, and the ramifications of what's going to happen within that region, all to protect the so-called interests of the devil Jew, the Israelis. Mm-hmm. You know, the sad thing is that we're caught up in something that, number one, and I'm not even equating myself really with it, but I'm just saying, as so-called Americans, we're caught up in a situation that is not going to be what they think it's going to be. They think that they're going to be able to go into Iran and just take over, just be able to do whatever they wish to do. Now, if you notice, they haven't, and I apologize for not being able to pronunciate the word right, but Hertford, Samufor, whatever the hell it is, that whole sea situation that they got blocked off
straight,
in Iran.
Yeah, Strait of Hormuz. Mm-hmm.
Strait of Hormuz. Now, you know, think about this. Just think about it and try to be logical in your thought process. If you are supposed to be the most powerfulest nation in the world, you're supposed to have the powerfulest military in the world, the best ships, the best airplanes, just the best everything. You know what I mean? Why haven't you been able to open that bad boy back up? Think about that. If you're supposed to be the muckety muckster of all muckety muckster, the baddest cat on the block, why you ain't been able to open that up? So now you gonna place thousands of American citizens to attempt to open it up when the reality is you ain't gonna probably be able to open it up. In the process, a lot of lives is gonna be destroyed. And also in the situation, you're gonna have a lot of destruction in the scenario. And then on top of that, if Iran follow through on some of the things that they say they're gonna follow through, like bombing the water, the electricity, and all of that, the whole region is just absolutely destroyed. And then on top of that, what type of damage you think it's going to do economically in this country and that region? And then on top of that, when it's all said and done, whenever the deal is made, America's going to be on the hook to rebuild Israel. Ain't that some shit?
Thanks for your
and the thing is, we ain't got no business being there. America has no business being in that situation and scenario, all because they were manipulated, because you got a retard, a degenerate, a pedophile, a lowlife, a stinking human being at the head of the so-called empire. And the question I always ask is this, Elliot. When it's all said and done, how are black people going to survive and how are we going to benefit from this? Do we ever really ask ourselves that question? You think?
Well, we'll get into that answer next week.
Okay, I look forward to it. I'll make sure that I'm here because this is not right, man.
This is crazy. Bring it back up. I'd like to discuss it.
I will, brother. Because the thing is, by the time you have your guest next Sunday, it will probably be 2 or 3 days since they've been on the ground and people dying. And you know, lastly, I'll say this, Elliot. You remember, ever since the Vietnam, every time they've had a war, you know they never show the bodies or tell you the correct figure on how many people have died. And believe me, they say they got over 100,000 in the region. And I wouldn't be surprised, based on Iran being prepared for this war for the last 20 years, that if a quarter of them or more are killed. But listen, thank you again, and it was a good show.
Thanks for your contribution. Richard, we come to the end of another program.
Yes. Yeah, we moving right along on this.
Before we go, let me get the lineup on Time for the Awakening Media. Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics, dialogue, and guests, on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings, Our Story with Bobby West Johnson. Brother Johnny is co-host, live from New Orleans, Louisiana. And then they double back on Wednesday at the same time, 7 to 9 p.m. with Our Story. Thursdays, the door is always open for the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Brother Patrick Lumumba, Sister Crystal Denise, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Malik Hayes, four hosts, one mission, to the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi, Mississippi on the Move. Sundays, Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 to 6. Time for an awakening from 6 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always. We'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
To save the children.